Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. You can also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me on Saturdays with Joy Keys at hotmail.com. Again, that's Saturdays with Joy Keys at hotmail.com. I would love to hear from you, and I want to thank and give a shout out to all the people who have supported the show by listening and donating. You can donate via PayPal, Saturdays with Joy Keys. And if you've missed the show or you come in the middle, you want to listen to the beginning, we're on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. So you can always catch up. Just look up my name and the guest and stuff will pop up in those different arenas. Well, this morning I have an author. This is her third book she's written. She wrote The Rib King and The Talented Ribkins, and which received the 2018 Ernest J. Gaines Award for Literary Excellence and the Hurston Wright Legacy Award for Debut Fiction. Her writing has appeared in Guernica, The Times Literary Supplement, Copper Nickel, and Caillou. Hubbard is a recipient of the Radcliffe Institute Fellowship, a Berlin Prize Fellowship, and a Rona Jaffe Foundation Writers Award. And she received many other fellowships as well. And she was born in Massachusetts and raised in the U.S. Virgin Islands and Florida, but now she lives in New Orleans. Welcome, Lady Hubbard.
Hi. No, it's great to be here.
Thank you so much. I want to let everybody know our guest is a little under the weather, so really be patient with her this morning. I'm really happy that she's still willing to do the interview. So she's just dealing with a little cold here, and we're not playing any jokes with you. Her voice is really deep and everything like that, you know. But let's start at the beginning. You know, I talked to a lot of authors about their experience with libraries. Did you go to the library when you were a kid?
Yeah, I can see how that would be a consistent theme with writers. But, yeah, I spent a lot of time in the library at my school when I was younger.
What do you remember, like a certain book that you would always go to or a section?
I liked libraries and I liked exploring. I mean, I read a lot when I was in middle school and in high school, just whatever was there. So it was just a place of refuge for me in terms of books and ideas and stories in general. That's what I remember.
I remember the smell. I love the smell of books, actual physical books. I used to take my daughter to, like, the bookstore, and that was actually a fun thing to do, to go to the bookstore. And I remember as a kid going through the turnstile to get into the library. It was the weirdest thing that they had this turnstile. Like, you had the door, and then you had the turnstile to get in. And now as an adult, if I go there, it looks so excruciatingly teeny. Like, I fit through
that's
that
funny.
Turnstile, you know,
that's funny.
To get into the library and everything. But I myself love the library. Did your parents read to you when you were younger? If so, was there a certain book that you liked that you remember?
You know what's funny? I'm trying to remember. I spent a lot of time reading alone. That's what my early memories. But I know there was the book, The Snowy Day. I remember that. And I remember High Cat.
Yes. Yes,
those made a huge
day.
Impression on me. I still remember them.
You
didn't know
that is one of my
High
favorite.
Cat.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a beautiful story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm so. My heart's a pitter patter with The Snowy Day.
You remember that too? Yeah. That was a.
Oh my
beautiful.
God. Yes. This is the best. I have a Snowy Day copy here, and I remember reading it to my daughter. I think my brother probably he got read to, and then I remember my dad used to read the Monkey King story to us. That was a big story he read, because it was like this huge book, I remember. But these are just memories, you know, that we have as children. And my point is that,
yeah,
you know, these are so, they make such an impact on our lives later, you know. You became a writer. I didn't become a writer, but I went into the arts initially. It's just things that, like, you don't realize how important they are and how they impact you. Now, this is your third book, and where did this title come from, The Last Suspicious Holdout?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I liked it because the suspicious is kind of ambiguous. It's like, is the holdout suspicious? Like, where is the suspicion coming from? And I don't know. I thought that was I always thought it was an interesting turn of phrase. And the way it fits in the collection of stories is kind of a pivotal moment in the book for me.
Right.
In terms of there's all kinds of cultural transitions and sort of figuring out what is going on and also being suspicious of what's going on around you and trying to sort of get. I like the ambiguity of it in terms of the book as a whole. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
like
there's
that.
Suspicious
yeah.
characters. There's suspicious
yeah.
characters. There's some people I'm very suspicious of, and there are other people I'm on the fence. Like I'm on the line. Like. Did they really do that, or did they not do that? What did he just say? You know, so when
right.
you guys read this book, she's right, because that my whole time I'm reading, I'm like, okay, what, you know, I'm thinking, when I read books, I'm like super critical and thinking about all types of things, you know, the environment, the weather, and this, that, and the other. And so I was like, you know, and then there's
right.
the actual entities that could be suspicious, you know.
Exactly.
Inside the book. So
right.
Mm-hmm.
People, characters that are suspicious of what's going on around them as well. Yeah. So they're not
yes,
sure they
exactly.
trust what's going on.
Trust.
So yeah.
Right. That's a big issue. Trust is a big issue in the book, you know. People not trusting, like I remember the husband who was the lawyer brought the felon home, and there was trust between husband and wife.
Right.
How do you think we develop trust? What did you learn about trust? Where did you learn about trust?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's very ambiguous. I think for a lot of characters, ultimately, it's about trusting yourself. And what you can handle in terms of other people. Can you handle other people? That's part of the suspicious part as well, because a lot of situations that the characters find themselves in are not, they're a bit ambiguous and not clear. And ultimately, I think it's about how much, a lot of the time, the characters trust their own perceptions and intuition. And finding themselves in situations where they're being asked or told to doubt their own perceptions. That's part of, I think, of a lot of what's going on in terms of trust in here. So
now,
I don't know if that
you,
makes
you
sense.
Have,
so
no, that does. I mean, think
does that
about
make sense?
Real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, real life.
Yeah.
You know, you are
yeah.
sometimes in positions and people make you doubt yourself, and you're like, no,
right.
the back of my neck is tingling right now. I know this is not right, or no, I know this is where I'm supposed to be. Stop trying to get me off track. That happens
right.
in real life. And talking about that, you had a great mentor, Toni Morrison. How did she help you stay on track and listen to your intuition?
It's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, she was a great, she was a writing teacher of mine, probably really the first real writing teacher I had when I was very young and I was just starting to write fiction. And I think that she helped me stay on track by, as you're saying, being very respectful and sort of helping me to be respectful of my own intuition. By which I mean I don't recall her saying, I mean, there were specific things obviously that she just thought were not right, but in general, it was like, what are you trying to do with your writing and really trying to help me clarify my own vision as opposed to imposing like her vision or what she, you know, and so that really helped me to learn to, or start to learn, I should say, to respect my own intuition about my writing. So it was never like what you're doing or what you're trying to do is wrong. It's like you need, can we try to clarify it so that it's clearer and sharper and that other people can see it too? So that
was,
I really did feel it was a very respectful, I don't know if that's the right word because, you know, I was just so in awe of her at the time, but it in a way it was very respectful of, my very young efforts to express myself.
Well, it sounds like she didn't impose her will or her view of what it should be on you. She wanted you to blossom, it sounds like. So I think that is respectful because there are people who may be great writers and they could have been your mentor and they could have totally overshadowed your voice and it wouldn't have been Lady. It would have been their voice and not Lady.
Exactly.
And,
and
so,
I think that's
such
a hard thing for a lot of people is to really learn to respect their own voices and their own perspectives. And so it's really important to be encouraged to do that. And to value your perceptions and your experiences. And do you know what I mean? Like, I think that that's kind of a really essential part of writing or being able to write is to realize that the worth of your own voice. Yeah.
Now, one of the issues in the book, and you brought this up before, I think I was trying to tell you earlier before we started, is the issue of resilience. And as a writer, you know, it's not a glamorous life, so to speak, most writers. You know, you might write for a long time before you get published. You might write for a long time before you really write what you want to write. How as a writer, how can you develop resilience as a writer?
Right. Well, see, that's and it is really important because it isn't easy. I don't think it's not an easy, and there's not really a lot of a proper way to do it. It's like everyone has to figure out their own path. But that's part of what I mean about the importance of respecting your own voice, because I think that it's required. You're going to have to publish your work. For a lot of people, I think that that's a really they're sort of co-related. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to value what you have to say before other people will. Often, you know, and I think that's part of the struggle for a lot of people in terms of staying with it and continuing to believe in their own voices. Yeah.
Now, the book is dealing with a lot of characters. There's all these little short stories and some a little longer. And they are also dealing with issues of resilience. You have immigration issues. You have people in prison issues, mental health issues, family issues, all dealing with these resilience. And also just overall arching as African-Americans, being resilient. What do you think makes African Americans resilient?
I don't know what makes African Americans. I mean, I think that we certainly have had to be to survive our history in this country. It has required a great amount of resiliency, and not just. I don't mean that in just like a strictly mechanical sense. I mean, I think that the fact that so much. We've contributed so much to American society more broadly. So by resilience, I mean the ability to create art and to innovate and things like that. And I'm often awestruck by that. So I think it's just an inherent, for me, aspect of African-American culture and history because I think it's been the key to surviving. Yeah?
Mm-hmm,
it's required.
Mm-hmm.
Of certain people to be extremely resilient and to understand that resiliency is actually a very, and like survival itself, like a very complicated proposition, actually. Yeah. So I don't know the whys of it exactly.
The whys of it,
true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, but one of the stories is dealing with immigration. The young lady, you know, she's an immigrant, and you came from the Virgin Islands. When did you come from the Virgin Islands? How old were you? Were you very young or older?
Oh yeah, no, I wasn't born there. I moved there when I was really young, and I moved back for high school. So I moved back when I was 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you?
So I moved back to the States. Yeah.
What did you experience? Huh? Did they think you were from the island, or did you have any problem blending in, or did you have an accent, or what did you experience coming back?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, that's because she's not really immigrant. She's like me. That's probably is somewhat self-reflective, that character. But yeah, no, it's not. It's sort of, she's just very displaced because these things make a difference to people. She's not really West Indian. She's African American, but she talks, has like a little accent, and she's also a little bit alienated from the culture, which is part of why she doesn't. That's the first story in the collection, and it involves a group of kids going to the Flip Lady's house, which was something that people did in Florida when I was younger. And I think it's a lot of places. It's a woman that sold homemade popsicles to kids, and this is something that's very commonplace. But for her, it's she doesn't really understand how to deal with this flip. So it's like a very mundane thing, but the character is just very alienated. And I was really interested in that story and the fact that her root was so sort of not normal, right? Because she's not really West Indian, and she's just very displaced. Yeah.
Is that now that's the one you want to read a little bit from?
Oh, I could. I definitely could.
Oh,
no.
Which one did you want to read from? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's right. That's what I said. That's right. Flip Lady, 1992.
Okay.
And I'll read the first paragraph. So this is the first story in the collection. I didn't really explain, but all the stories in this collection are set in the same town in the South. It's in Gulf Coast, Florida, actually. And they each take place in a different year. And it goes from 1992 to 2007. And for really specific reasons, I was really interested in that period of time. But this is how it starts. And this is Flip Lady, and it's 1992. One, history. Raymond Brown hears the sound of laughter. He puts down his book and looks out the window. Here they come now, children of the ancient ones, the hewers of wood, the cutters of cane, barreling down the sidewalk on their huffies and schwins, little legs pumping over fat rubber tires, brakes squealing as they pull into the drive, standing on tiptoes as they straddle their bikes and stare at the house with their mouths hanging open. Just like before. Some of them he still recognizes. He made out with that girl's sister in the seventh grade, played basketball with that boy's uncle in high school. This one was all right until his brother joined the army. That one was okay until her daddy went to jail. And you see that girl in the back, the chubby one standing by the curb next to the brand new Schwinn? She hasn't been the same since the invasion of Grenada 9 years ago in 1983. The Spice Islands. When the Marines landed, she was 3 years old, living in St. George's near the medical clinic with her mother, the doctor, and Aunt Ruby, the nurse. The power went off, hospital plunging into blue darkness while machine gun fire cackled in the distance like a bag of Jiffy Pop bubbling up on the stove. Oh, no, Aunt Ruby said, just like before. It's all there in the book on his lap. Colonizers fanning out across the Atlantic like a hurricane, not exactly hungry but looking for spice. They claimed the land. They built the plantations. They filled the Americas up with slaves. Sugar kept the workers happy, distracted them from grief. And 400 years later, you have your military invasions and McDonald's Happy Meals, your ho-hos and preemptive strikes, your Oreos and Reaganomics, your Captain Crunch and Kool-Aid. These kids can't get enough of it. They sit in the driveway. They shift in their seats. They grip the plastic streamers affixed to the handlebars. One of them kicks the kickstand and steps forward, fingers curled into a small, tight fist as he knocks on the kitchen door. Flip lady, you in there? Just like before. They roam the entire earth in search of spice, so why not here? Why not now? Flip lady, you home? It's me, Calvin. I'll just stop right there. But yes, that's the first story. Yeah, and you see there's like a girl, the main character is looking at, that in some ways her experience does parallel my own awkward childhood. So
Now, one of the chapters is called Trash. And is there something you have that you should throw out? Is there something that lady has that she probably should throw out now and then you're holding on to?
I'm sure there's a lot that I should just throw out, but it's hard to. That's hilarious. Yeah, because that story, the woman is actually thinking about separating from her husband. So, yeah, it's like a, it's just the stress, because that's a after Katrina story, and part it's the stress of dealing with the aftermath of that is leading her to think about things that she's not sure the actual value of anymore. So,
you know, we hold on to so much. You know, I had my grandmother pass away recently, and she has a house full of things, and we were in the house a couple of weeks ago going through stuff, and it's just amazing. I was like, oh my God, there's so much in here. Like, what? Like, I got overwhelmed with trying to, like, okay, well, this is some stuff I want, but I don't need this stuff either. Like, what am I going to do with this stuff? And really deciding, like, okay, just leave that. Like, you don't need that. You have memories in your head and your spirit about the woman, you know, and not just trying to take stuff just to take stuff, because then that's more stuff for me, and I don't need it, you know. But then with the woman in your chapter, like you said, I mean, there's physical trash of, like, we think, like, you know, bottles and plates and things, and then there's relationships that may be trash in our lives that we need to get rid of people, you know, they could be weighing us down sometimes. So that's a choice that we have to deal with as humans. What relationships do we keep?
And just really, like, actually, as opposed to, like, in that particular story, really thinking about whether you do want to hold on to things as well. Like, if maybe other people do not see the value of things sometimes that are important to you. And I think that's what's weighing on that character's mind is, So, and it becomes related to the insuring them to go over the value of all the things they've lost in Katrina. So just reflecting on what the actual value, what she wants to hold on to, that, you know, maybe in her case, because she's upset that her husband took it upon himself to throw out a box of old clothes that she wanted to keep. So it's really, again, and I said this before, a lot of the stories are about trusting your own perceptions and also being aware of them. And sometimes, like in the larger sense of that story, they have great consequence because I really was thinking about Katrina and the way in which New Orleans was talked about or represented at that time, and understanding and respecting the value of things that, again, sometimes other people do not seem to really recognize the value of.
Well, you know, in that story, they have neighbors, these white neighbors, and the couple, he was noticing they having these little not parties per se, but these guys in suits, and they were talking, and he was thinking that they were really scoping out the neighborhood maybe and thinking at on a wider scale. I'm not just going to buy that house, but maybe buy more things of property. And those types of things happen. You know, when disaster hits one area, there are people that swoop in knowing that they can get these spots or homes or land that have memories and spirits and get them for cheap. and make money off of them and take advantage of grief and people's need for money. So that happens in real life, you know. Now,
it definitely does. Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say it definitely does. And so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I got some fun things for you. If you had to go to Mars, what are you going to take with you? Just maybe two or three things.
A pen and a paper, piece of paper, some paper and a pen. And I probably need my glasses, too, because I'm very nearsighted. I think if they'll come with me, I'd bring my kids with me too. So I'd bring my family. I don't know. That's a great question, actually. But definitely the pen and paper and glasses.
Pen and paper and glasses.
Yeah.
Okay. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Oh. Wow. Also, I know people ask me that because of the first book I wrote, The Talented Ribkins,
mm-hmm.
all the characters have talents. I don't know. I think I'd like to fly. Today
I would like to
fly. Yeah, so that might change over time, but today it would be pretty nice to have the ability to fly. So
now, do you celebrate?
I don't need to deeper than that to say, huh?
No, that's fine. Whatever your answer would be fine, because everybody gets a different answer. And everybody, you know, I've asked it many times, and some people are like, really like, oh my God. And other people are like, oh yeah, I know what I would be. You know, so everybody's different. It's okay if you want to fly. I'm all for it. Now, what's your favorite food at Thanksgiving?
Oh gosh. My favorite food at Thanksgiving. Well, that's a really funny question for me because people point it out because they say I write about food a lot because I have a lot of allergies. And so there's a lot of stuff I actually enjoy to eat that I can't. I actually eat a lot of oysters. I tend to eat oysters on Thanksgiving. So I would say that. It's probably very,
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that, but yeah.
So are you vegan?
I'm not. Well, I eat oysters, so I can't. I can't eat.
I guess that's
cow
not. Yeah,
milk
yeah.
Or yeah, and I can't eat wheat. I do eat fish. I don't really eat red meat or yeah. So, but for on Thanksgiving, I we have our own traditions. I tend to eat a lot of oysters. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a traditional answer. So.
No, but that's great. I was not expecting that. If you had $100, what would you do with it?
If I had $100?
$100.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. Honestly, I don't know. I'd probably put it in the bank. I don't know what I would do with $100. That's all I have is $100, or I just have,
so all you have
an extra $100. All I have is $100.
You could make it in your interpretation. See, like people interpret
I
art.
I know. Right. No, that's actually an interesting question. I think my first instinct would be to put it in the bank and try to figure out what's going on and take a minute to think about it. So the way that question, I heard it, was I only have $100. So you probably read into how people interpret that in itself.
Yes.
But I was like, oh, I only have $100. So, yeah, I put it in the bank probably.
But see, look at that. As a writer, also, people look at your writing. They may read one thing one way, and you're thinking, oh, I wasn't expecting them to look at it that way. You know, I wrote
that
it this way.
True.
So, you know, that's like an art. You know, when you go into the museum and you see the picture, the artist had one vision, but then the viewer – the person looking is seeing something else maybe, and so that's the beauty, I think, of art. And writing is art. Questions are also art, I guess.
No, absolutely. And sometimes it's really wonderful and you learn a lot from how people respond to your work. Sometimes it's great and sometimes it's things you need to think about. Do you know what I mean? So I think
exactly.
that's really great. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's up next for Lady Hubbard? And, you know, I have to tell you, when I say your name, I don't know, for some reason, like, music comes to my mind, and people may be listening. They might be thinking I'm calling you Lady, as in man, woman, lady. But her name is Lady, L-A-D-E-E, and her last name is Hubbard.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, I think it's very musical sounding, and I don't know, like, I feel like you should be, like, a jazz singer as well or something.
That's probably, like, the Lady Day. It sounds like
right,
Lady
exactly.
Day a little bit. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
well, that's nice.
What's next
it's
for
the,
you?
It's the name I was born with. And thank you for pronouncing it correctly, because a lot of people do not do that. It gets I get called Laddie quite a bit. But it is Lady. So, and that's
really?
That's my
That's
yeah.
interesting. Okay. I don't know. I just... I look up people's names that usually I try if I don't know how they sound, but for some reason I just thought, okay, I know that's how it sounds. But what's up next for you? Do you already have another book on the horizon? Can you give us any hints?
I do. I'm working. I love writing, so I'm always whenever I can I'm trying to work on something. So yeah, I'm working on a another novel. So it's probably at a stage still where it's, I should just leave it at that at this point. But, yeah, no, I'm,
okay.
I'm definitely
no,
working
no
on another novel.
Okay. Well, now, where can people find you online? What's your, like, your handles on, like, Twitter and Instagram and things like that?
Oh, yeah, well, I am on Instagram. Yeah, it's just Lady Hubbard. I'm also, I have a website, ladyhubbard.com, that people can
mm-hmm.
go to as well. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You sounded great today. So that cold is on hold. Probably when you hang up, you'll probably sneeze 10 times.
I know. No, I'm surprised. I'm happy that that wasn't a problem. So I was a little worried about that.
Yes. So no worries. Thank you again for coming on this morning. I'm going to give away some copies of your book to the listeners.
Oh, great.
So, so I'm going to encourage them to follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys, or check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, or on Instagram, so you can find out the question, and then you'll have to email the answer to SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com, and so you can win a copy of the book. Thank you again, Lady, for coming on. I hope you feel better, and maybe you'll have some flying dreams tonight.
It's wonderful talking to you.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with author Lady Hubbard. She has written three books, The Rib King, The Talented Ribkins, and this last book that we were just speaking about that I'm going to be giving away some copies of, The Last Suspicious Holdout. So it has so many different stories. They're all interconnected, and there are some stories that you got to read all the way to the end, because it'll give you, like, this weird, like, loop, like, you're like, whoa, what did he just say? So don't give up on a chapter. Maybe you're like, okay, all right, what's the point? Read them all the way through, and also read the multiple chapters, because you'll see the interconnected, the different characters and how they're connected to each other. But I'm going to give away some copies, so keep an eye out on social media so that you can see how you're going to win a copy. And again, thank you guys for your support. You can always donate to PayPal, Saturdays with Joy Keys, and you can listen to previous shows on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, in case you've missed anything. Next week, I'm going to be speaking with author Nomina Forna about her book, again, at 11:30. Normally, I do shows at 11, but her show is going to be at 11:30. So you can check that out, and you can also go again on social media to see the link and check out the phone number to call in. The call-in number is always the same, 516-387-1745, and you can call and ask a question. Or if you want to just type something on social media to me, that way I can ask the author one of the questions that you might have. All right, you guys have a great weekend. You know, watch out for this variant that's going on with this COVID. I hope you guys got all your shots, and you may still have to wear a mask. And always just wash your hands. I mean, I remember, come in the house, wash your hands. Go to the bathroom, wash your hands with soap. if you can't use soap, then if you have the hand sanitizer, you know, that's also helpful. But try to protect yourself as best as you can and those around you. It'll protect those. You guys have a great weekend, and I will talk to you later.